What's more, you gotta get it done.
There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam. Let's get the gleam, all right? Let's go.
Want a piece of that championship? Put it in here.
Hey, guys, where else would you rather be?
Welcome into Hour 2 of Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson. Join the conversation now on the Long & Foster Baker Team Hotline, 540-639-4900, or text Rick and the show at 744-2990. And now your host, the Big Dog, Rick Watson.
Friday edition. Thank you again for two things. For one, thank you for your request. Still getting reaction from the Coach Pry interview yesterday. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. He had a good time yesterday. That was great. We always have a good time on Friday. Joining us on the program, he is the owner, the founder, the editor, the proprietor, the man who keeps it all in order at Tech Sideline, Will Stewart. Good morning.
I am the man who pays the bills is what I am.
This is true. That too.
So we did a podcast yesterday with Andy Bitter. It's like an hour and 45 minutes long.
He's so bitter.
He's so Andy. So it's my attempt to do a Joe Rogan style podcast where you just sit and wear somebody out for 2 or 3 hours.
Absolutely.
And the focus of it was the process of us hiring Andy, because that happened a little over a year ago.
Wow, that's right. It has been.
Yeah, so we took people kind of behind the scenes, the back and forth, the offer and, you know, everything. And I was going somewhere with this. What did you say right before I started talking?
We had Coach Pry on yesterday and people reacting, thanking them for the Finally Friday request. And then we got right into you.
Oh, man. I totally lost my
I do that all the time.
This is awful.
No, it happens. I did it this morning. I forgot something out of the house this morning.
That's what you get for having me on at 7 in the morning.
I get it.
Okay, it'll come back to me later.
Andy, podcast, how you hired him.
Yeah, but that wasn't what I wanted to talk about. Oh, man. What a loser. So let me ask you something I do want to talk about.
Yeah.
So every week after I leave here, I go to that nameless gym down the street because they're not a paid sponsor.
Correct.
And I catch the beginning of the Power Hour, which is next hour. And so you do all the little vignettes, the little bits. My number one play is the Power Sweep.
Is the Power Sweep.
Feel the power of the day. But there's one clip in there that has nothing to do with power.
Really? Which one?
It's Bill Murray talking about he's doing the motivational speech in Stripes where he goes, you know what that means? We're mutts. He never says the word power.
No,
why is that in there?
Because that was when it was our former producer, Logan, we put that together. We both love that movie and that line. So we just kind of paid homage to it and threw it in there. And it's just kind of
doesn't fit, man.
Kind of lives right in there.
Every time I hear it, it's like somebody's poking me with their finger going, doesn't fit. Doesn't go with the rest of it. Doesn't fit.
Yeah, that's why. That's why. That's when he's given the speech there to the rest of the troops in Stripes.
Oh, yeah. You know, my story about that is I'm sitting there in the movie theater. Was that the summer of 81?
Probably.
So let's say it's the summer of 81.
Probably.
I just finished my 10th grade year in high school. Which means I'm 16. I'm watching an R-rated movie. Wasn't supposed to be there.
Of course.
And Bill Murray goes.
Made it more fun.
Bill Murray goes, we are 10-1.
10-1.
And I turned to the person next to me. I said, 10-1? And they looked at me and went, Vietnam. You idiot.
Yeah. Oh.
Me, student of history.
Of course.
What?
Of course.
You mean we lost that
one? We lost one? Did we actually lose?
The textbooks never said that.
Yeah, right. And they kind of hide that part of history. Yeah.
Well, if you remember from your school days, D-A-Z-E, back when you were young, they would teach the hell out of the American Revolution. So you're in school for, let's call it 30 weeks, and I swear you spend a month studying the American Revolution.
Yeah.
You know, and then you study all these periods of history, and then they get up towards World War I and World War II. You're in 7th and 8th grade, you know, and you're studying American history. They get towards World War I and World War II, and they cram all that in the last 2 weeks of school, and off you go for the summer.
True. Yeah.
So at the end of the year, you'd get short shrift to the stuff that was more relevant. It was the 1970s, you know, early 1980s, and they were just glossing over World War I and especially World War II. They should have done the American Revolution for like a week.
Yeah, and then moved into the more modern.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, I know the American Revolution is very important. It's the backbone of the country, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was horrible at history.
I was okay at it, you know.
I couldn't retain any of that. Kind of like you and your Andy Bitter story. I would do that. I was way back when I was much younger. Still was unable to remember dates and things and stuff like that.
Well, what TSL listeners discovered about me yesterday is I don't remember anything anymore. This is not me talking about getting older.
No.
My brain plays a cruel trick on me of everything in life is a task. And when I get the task done, I flush all the pertinent data.
Yeah.
So the reason I said that in our podcast with Andy yesterday is I said that and then I was like, so we're going to talk about the process of Tech Sideline hiring you. And I'm interested in what you remember because I know I don't remember at all. And one of the questions one of our message board people asked was, you know, prior to us hiring Andy Bitter, had Andy ever thought about working for us? And had we ever thought of hiring Andy? Well, absolutely. Chris Coleman and I used to sit there and strategize.
Sure. How to get him.
Yeah. How we're going to get him when the Athletic inevitably does its stupid thing of getting rid of him. Because we watched the Athletic from the very beginning. And
it's really bad.
You know, so hopefully your listeners will find this interesting. But what can we say? It's the off season and there's not a lot to talk
Correct.
About. Correct. So. If you out there in radio land are unfamiliar with The Athletic was started circa 2016, 2017. There was a round of layoffs that occurred either at ESPN or Fox News, Fox Sports, not Fox News, Fox Sports, or both. So I remember in particular with the Fox Sports website, they laid off all of their writers and they just went to a video format. And ESPN also had a bloodletting around that time where they let go a lot of people, a lot of writers, a lot of experienced writers. And so all of a sudden, all of these titans of the industry are free, floating free. And I don't know the exact details how this happened, but Stuart Mandel, Andy tells me it's pronounced Mandel.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuart Mandel got hooked up with some venture capital and decided to launch The Athletic. And the idea behind The Athletic was it was going to be hyper-local sports coverage, similar to what Tech Sideline does. Hyper-local. We cover the heck out of Virginia Tech.
Right.
The Athletic was going to do that across all of college sports
right.
and across all of pro sports. And they were going to embed a beat writer in like every Power 5 school. And so when the funding started coming in, they received two or three rounds of funding that, if I remember correctly, totaled $30 or $40 million.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are a fledgling business that is receiving venture capital, you spend the venture capital. You don't make business decisions per se. You spend the capital that has been infused. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to grow your business as big as possible, as fast as possible, with no regard for profit, almost no regard for profitability. Because what's happening is the people who are starting this business up, they want to build it up and then sell it and make money.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So the idea is if you've got a few rounds of funding coming in at 30 or 40 million bucks, then you want to sell this thing for like 100 million. Everybody cashes out.
Yeah.
Now, whoever buys it for 100 million, now they have to make it a profitable business.
That's a huge challenge, yeah.
Right. So, and this happens over and over and over in industry. This isn't just a media business
right,
thing.
Right.
It's in every business.
Every business,
thing.
Yeah.
So they made a couple of mistakes. They said, we're never going to have advertising.
Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing was they just went really wide and broad all over the country. Oh, and they sold their subscriptions cheap. they're like, hey, get a year of The Athletic for $25.
Yeah, for the entire year.
Dude, I've been running Tech Sideline as a pay model for 20 years, and that doesn't work. If you have full-time staff, you're an idiot if you're only charging $25. Did I say month? I meant year.
It was a year subscription, yeah.
So you're a moron if you're only charging $25 a year. I got spreadsheets that say that doesn't work. So The Athletic was essentially giving away their subscriptions. So they got to the sale point, and the New York Times bought them. And Andy had told me this before, and he told it again on the podcast yesterday. He said when the New York Times bought The Athletic, my wife, and this is Andy talking, my wife came to me and said, what does this mean for you? And Andy's like, oh, no problem. Don't worry about it. And my wife said, watch your back. And sure enough, it wasn't too far down the road. What started happening was some of the beat writers, and it did not matter what the market was. There was like, you know, Texas is a huge fan base, University of Texas.
Absolutely.
Well, they either reassigned the University of Texas beat writer or he quit to go somewhere else and they never replaced him. So they started cutting costs and trying to get to profitability by not replacing guys who left and actually laying some people off. And sure enough, one day they laid off Andy. And we were ready because we'd watched that whole thing. And I knew the financials of what it would take to hire him. And, you know, we don't charge $25 a year at Tech Sideline.
Right.
That doesn't pay the
bills.
It's
not going to work, yeah.
We have four full-time staffers. We're about to add a fifth this summer. We'll announce that soon. And you don't do that if you're charging $25 or $35 a year. You are $120 a year like we are. We're serious about this business, you know?
And people don't mind paying that because you're giving them information and insight they're not going to find anywhere else. And that's the whole give and take.
One of the interesting things about starting a business is there's all these stories out there about people starting business. You know, when I started Hokie Central / Tech Sideline years ago, and I did all the work. And there comes this moment where the monster gets up off the table and starts to walk around without you doing it.
Yeah, hey, look.
And that's where Tech Sideline is
working.
Now. The monster's up and walking around going, you know, and doing its thing. And it's just because I've been fortunate enough to hire just great people. Chris Coleman, David Cunningham, Andy Bitter. That thing runs on its own now. You know, don't get me wrong. I work all day, every day. I just don't get to do the fun stuff anymore.
Well, with Stuart Mandel behind The Athletic, I wasn't surprised that it was a horrible model to begin with. Not real impressed with him ever.
You know, I still think that model could have worked.
If they'd have charged a little more and had a little more forethought about long-term sustainability, sure.
You know, every year, so Chris Coleman goes to Europe every year, and he's in Europe right now. He's doing his going through the UK thing. He goes to see the Tottenham Spurs play a game, and he travels around. He's a history graduate.
Yeah, sure.
So he travels around, see World War II stuff. So he's over in Europe right now for 3 weeks. And whenever he goes to Europe, I take over the Friday Q&A, and I allow people to ask me any questions about Tech Sideline that they want to ask. And somebody asked me once upon a time, you know, what is your biggest mistake running this business? And, you know, we've had some issues, but the one thing that I picked is the biggest mistake I made for years and years was not charging what the product was worth. We started out at $35, then we went to $50, and I left over the course of a couple of decades, I've left hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table because I did not charge what we were worth.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't just an issue of making more and more money. It's not about that. It's about if I had charged what we were worth, I could have hired more people and we could have been killer. You know, we're killer now, but we could have been even more killer earlier in the process. And I just remember the story I wanted to tell.
Yeah, there it is. Reel it back in.
Yeah, we were talking about remembering stuff. And people had asked, you know, did you ever think about hiring Andy? And did Andy ever think about coming to work for you? And Andy said, he sat there in the other chair and he's like, well, you and I met about this. And you called me up one time and we went to lunch and we talked about it. And I was like, really? When was that?
We had a conversation?
He said, it was like 2015 or so. We went out to lunch at McAdoo's, and you were just kind of, you know, that was when I worked for the Roanoke Times, and you were just kind of, you know, feeling things out. And I was like, oh, wow.
I'm glad I did that.
No memory of that at all.
Yeah. I don't believe you.
Yeah. So that was the context of the podcast was we're going to talk about me hiring you because even my horrible brain treated hiring you as a task to be accomplished.
A task to be accomplished.
And when it got accomplished, I flushed most of the memories. So it's terrible. People tell me all the time, you need to write your memoirs, and I'm like, it's going to be a 30-page book.
Right. Can't recall any of it.
You're not going to want to read it.
I wonder today, it's interesting, I think about that, where we are with college sports, the frustration that people have, the portal, and where we're going to go with the NIL and the legislation. I wonder today that model would never get off the ground because I don't think enough people would go, I'm not spending money. College sports has just completely thrown itself into such a chaos that I'm not going to spend money. You know what I'm saying? Like, I bet you something like The Athletic that was really focused on the colleges and those little pockets, there would be no chance for it today. I don't think enough people would respond.
Well,
I really don't.
I think their business model should have been for the larger markets to support the smaller markets. Like how many people are subscribing to The Athletic to read their San Francisco 49ers coverage? If it's 10,000 people, it can be very profitable, and that can help subsidize maybe a market that isn't mm-hmm. as profitable. But that's not how business
yeah,
thinks.
No, exactly.
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm concerned about, the future of our business is we have a younger following on social media, mm-hmm. of course. But by and large, our paid subscribers are an older, more affluent demographic. And it is the older portion of the fan base that is really, in particular, not reacting kindly to.
I know.
It's not so much the NIL. I think people are getting used to that. It's still a little scary to them. It's the roster churn that is just the constant free agency that's happening in college athletics. And I see it on our message boards. I'm not an idiot. I pay attention, and a lot of people on our message boards are saying, I'm just not into this anymore.
Yeah.
So I fully expect us to start losing subscribers gradually.
Yeah, and it won't have anything to do with the sideline. It's all about just people going, why should I try to worry about following this team when the roster is going to look so different year to year? And that part's not going to change legislation or not, by the way. The NIL will be legislated. It's all going in-house, but the roster turnover, unless they draw contracts into it and can say, hey, here's a 2-year deal. We're going to sign you now for this. You get your NIL, but you've got to be committed. That's the only way it's going to stop.
I am not an expert on this stuff. And if BDST legal counsel is listening, hopefully I will not stick my foot in it here. But I read a little bit about this stuff, and everybody agrees that there needs to be – or do we need to go to a break? Because I'm about to talk
for another
5 minutes.
Let's go to a break here. We'll save this for the side of the news. Will Stewart's in the studio. It's good stuff. I think it's stuff that people – I get all the time. People go, you know, you start talking about stuff on the show, either just ranting or with guests, and I'm thinking, wow, I never thought about that. Then the rest of the day I find myself thinking about it, talking about it with people I work with. I'm like, yeah, that's the point. So I think this is one of those. More coming up. Jen and Mike Ashley in Hour 3.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block-long limousine, EO11. EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Folland Green, EO11.
Man, it's good stuff. Sammy Davis Jr., part of that original Rat Pack.
It's all a state of mind. Whether or not
a lot of things you talk about, and Will and I know I've talked off the air about if you had a time machine, some things you would do. Like Will and I would go to all of the stores back in 1961 and buy as many Fantastic Four 1 issues as we could and go, ha ha.
As many amazing fantasy 15s as we can find.
I would love to go spend like a week just kind of being a hanger rounder guy of the Rat Pack back when early Vegas and they were breaking onto the scene. Just give me the leftovers or whatever you've got.
I saw a documentary on Dean Martin one night that was really good.
Yeah,
you know, it made me appreciate how magnetic of a person he was.
I know.
And the same thing happens if you go to see Graceland in Memphis.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get the pure magnetic Elvis.
Yes.
What a great guy he was.
I know. Dean was a great actor, too. He did it all, man.
Elvis?
Dean Martin.
Dean Martin, yeah.
Yeah. He did it all. All right. Halfway home here on the Finally Friday edition. Will Stewart in studio. We'll get into about, you know, why should I be committed to college athletics any longer supporting when these athletes are not committed to us? Well, we'll talk about that, where this might be headed. And now you see kind of this push from athletes saying, maybe we don't want contracts after all, because someone's gotten into their ear and said, guess how this is going to turn out? Be careful what you wish for. We're coming up with Will after this. Welcome back. 25 minutes for the top of the hour. The Crystals. Will Stewart in studio from Tech Sideline. Hope you're well wherever you might be. 639-4900, 744-2900. This is one of the songs you probably hear in a movie and you don't think about it until you hear it again. Oh, yeah, what was that? I heard that.
All right, BDST fans, what scene, famous scene, is that song you
see? See, there we go.
Famous scene.
I love seeing, like, the old Motown, like, these videos. Most of it's stock photography. There's pictures of the band doing it. It's really cool. These ladies, it's kind of cool. The old dresses, man, looking sharp.
Yeah.
Seeing them sing together. They didn't have videos much back then, so it's kind of cool. So what movie is that from?
Goodfellas.
Oh, okay.
So there's a famous scene. It's a single-take scene where Ray Liotta's character is taking his girlfriend into the restaurant. And they go through the back of the restaurant. So they don't enter from the front because he's mafia.
Right.
Or he's trying to impress her. I don't know. And they get out of the car and they walk into the back of the restaurant and they walk like down some steps and through the kitchen and out into the dining room. And people are moving in front of them and pulling tables out of the way and putting a table in and putting a tablecloth on it. And this is all done. It's a single take. It's a couple of minutes long, and the camera follows the two of them into this walk through
right.
the restaurant.
Yeah, and I've seen that done a lot. Like, yeah. I don't want to say The Simpsons did a parody of that scene. Yeah, that's it. And Family Guy. Yes.
Now yes. Yes. And you ever seen the 1995 movie
yes.
Swingers with Vince Vaughn and those guys?
Good movie.
They do a riff on that where they're going into a club and they follow him into the club single take from behind. Who's the director on that? Is it Tarantino?
It might be.
Yeah,
it might be Tarantino.
All right, so hang on a second, folks, while we type in.
Big Vince Vaughn fan, by the way.
Yeah, especially young Vince Vaughn. Goodfellas director, Scorsese, Martin Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese.
So
that's a good movie.
Well, that's
Swingers is a good movie.
I think it's literally one of the top 10 movies of all time.
That's a good movie.
On IMDb.
Yeah, that's a really good movie.
Yeah, so it's a movie you can just watch over and over and
no
over.
No doubt.
You just
no
get
doubt.
Sucked right into
yeah,
it. As a matter of fact, Andy, in our podcast yesterday, he referenced Goodfellas because we were talking about when he got laid off by The Athletic. And he said, yeah, it was just they hit me up on a Friday and they said, we want to just check in with you like this afternoon. And if you've ever been in the corporate world, then you know that all the layoffs occur on Friday afternoon. They lay you off. They get the passwords to your computer and they escort you out the door. And they always do it like right before the weekend. So Andy said, he said, you know that scene in Goodfellas where Joe Pesci's character is going to become a made man, or he thinks he's going to. And they take him to a place and they walk him in and he's. And he thinks he's going to become a made man, And he looks around the room and he realizes, oh, the wrong people are here. And they blow a hole in his head. He goes, oh, crap. And so Andy said he gets ready to get on his Zoom call with the athletic people. He said, so the window comes up and there's like four people there.
Yeah.
And he got that Joe Pesci vibe and he was like, oh, crap. Here it comes. Uh-oh. And I'm laughing the whole time he's telling this story. And I'm like, Andy, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh. But, you know, we've all been there. And it is kind of funny. So anyway, so Scorsese was the first to shoot a scene like that. And it is a famous scene that, as you mentioned, is
– Now I know that's – and that's probably where I recall the song. They play the same song in the Family Guy.
Yeah.
A little tribute to
it. Oh, yeah. It's great stuff.
I think it's Peter himself actually walking.
Yeah, I would love – I'll have to look that up on YouTube.
I think it was Family Guy. It's one of those shows.
Oh, Family Guy's done everything.
It's one of those shows.
So it's got to be Family Guy. So the other thing – so that is a very sweet, simple song. He asked me to dance. You know, he kissed me. He took me home to meet his parents. He asked me to marry him, you know. Then he asked me to be his bride, always be right by his side. And I felt so happy, I almost cried. And then he kissed me. So it's such a sweet song.
Yeah.
But there's a line in there that says, I knew he was mine, so I gave him all the love that I had. What is that code for back in the 60s?
Oof.
Yes. And that makes me think of the song, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Which is... It's one of those songs that I listen to. It's similar era.
From that same era. Vibe. I was going to say, that's the same era in the 60s.
And I don't remember who did that song. I can't remember the name of the group, but it was African-American girl singers. And what they are singing about is, you know, tonight your mind so sweetly, you give your love completely. Will you still love me tomorrow? In other words, you're wanting me to do a thing.
Yeah.
And if I do the thing with you, will you still love me tomorrow?
Right.
And we've all, if you're ignorant like me and don't think about things, and you just sit there and sing the lyrics.
You don't realize what's behind them.
And then somebody explains to you what that song means. That song was pretty controversial.
Yeah.
And some radio stations would not play
absolutely.
It because of what it was saying, you know. And I learned this by reading an article that was the top 10 songs about losing your virginity. And Taylor Swift's song 15 is about that.
Oh,
and
Taylor Swift.
A song I'd never heard before that's really good is Vanessa Carlton, White Houses. Listen to that song.
I've heard that one.
And that's what she said.
And I know
about.
I haven't heard the Taylor Swift song.
Yeah. Vanessa Carlton sings at one point in the song words to the effect of, I wonder if you'll remember me. What I gave you is yours to keep. Ooh, that's quite
lots of images from that era. Yeah.
So anyway, let's move on back to college athletics. Did I wear it? Oh man, it's 7:40.
No, that's all right. Yeah.
So
it's off season, like you said.
So college athletics is in a state of flux right now that pretty much nobody's enjoying.
Even
the players are, you know, they're making more money, but more money, more problems, right? You know, and so it's a time of turmoil for the players also who are moving from team to team. And, you know, it's difficult for the fans. It's difficult for the coaches. It's difficult for athletic departments. And everybody wants reform to happen. But what is happening is that the industry as a whole is waiting for some court cases to work their way through the system. And the biggest one of those cases is called House versus the NCAA. And I think you and I have talked about this before. I think House has turned into a class action suit where athletes are suing the NCAA for past NIL. And the price tag on the lawsuit is over $4 billion. If the athletes win this, and remember, Rick, the NCAA loses every single court case. Everyone.
Yeah, it's a foregone conclusion they're going to pay. Yeah.
So if the NCAA loses this court case, which they probably will, then $4 billion is going to have to come from somewhere to pay athletes from the past. So what's happening is that the NCAA is negotiating a settlement. They're trying to settle it down for like $1 billion.
Because they knew they were going to lose.
They know they're going to lose.
Yep.
No. And I think this case is scheduled to go to court like in January. So they still got some months to figure some things out. And the NCAA, in addition to settling for a lower figure, is trying to put profit sharing into the settlement. Profit sharing of what? I don't know. TV contracts, athletic department revenue. You know, they're trying to not just take care of the athletes of the past, but put a mechanism in place to take care of the athletes of the future.
Right.
And in the meantime, from what I understand, the NCAA is trying to get Congress to give them an antitrust exemption. I don't know what that means. BDST legal counsel knows what it means. And I can tell you what someone told me. I said, what does that mean? And this person said, it means if you have an antitrust exemption, then you are an organization and the rules of the organization take precedent over
right.
the rule of law.
Exactly. Like baseball had all those years early on.
Yeah. So yep. anybody who is part of your organization goes in eyes wide open knowing that they have to abide by your
right.
rules.
Right.
So the NCAA wants this antitrust exemption so that they can put controls in place on all of this athlete movement that's happening. I don't know that that's going to happen. They talk about stuff in Congress a lot, but stuff it hasn't even gone to committee yet. Congressmen who give a damn are always writing bills and stuff like that.
Right.
But it just never happens. So there's no progress on that front. So what most people think is going to happen is one of two things. There will be no antitrust exemption, and athletes are somehow going to become employees and unionize, and then you've got collective bargaining. And in collective bargaining, each side gives something. In that case, the NCAA or the universities will say, okay, we'll share revenue with you, but in exchange, there have to be some
on our terms. That's exactly right.
You know? And this is how it works. Like you look at the NFL, one of the things, and again, I'm not a pro sports guy, but they were overpaying for rookies. And
yeah.
at some point,
yeah.
they put in, there's a rookie salary structure.
That's right. For every position.
You are drafted
yep.
here. This is what you're going to get yep. paid. And your first contract is like 4 years.
You got 4 years.
Well, I think there's a look in it.
Fifth year option.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's all structured now. There is no, you know.
No more controversy about
right.
that. Yeah.
And that was, I don't know. So that benefited the owners. I don't know what the players got in exchange. Well, actually, the players, that structure benefits the players, too, because the veterans were getting screwed because their team wanted to pay $75 million to a rookie
right,
quarterback.
Right.
So that's what the veteran players got in exchange was some.
In free agency, they got a lot of things that were handed to them. Yeah.
So if the athletes become employees, they'll unionize and there will be collective bargaining and some guardrails will be put back on this willy-nilly transfer. And let's be honest, like we said earlier in the conversation, we don't really care about the players getting paid. Everybody's getting used to that. The fans hate the roster churn. Everybody hates the roster churn. So the other thing that might happen is if the NCAA, you know, the more direct route is if the NCAA gets the antitrust exemption, then they'll be just able to put the guardrails in themselves. But collective bargaining with the athletes isn't just going to include profit sharing and controls on transfers. It will include things like medical benefits, you know, because these athletes, a lot of them suffer lifelong injuries, mm-hmm. and when their scholarship is over, they're done, you know. So there's going to be all kinds of stuff that your average fan doesn't think about. And I think one of the things that will also be negotiated is some sort of minimum contract. If you transfer to Virginia Tech from Baylor, as Kyron Drones did, then you have to sign a contract that says you're going to be at Tech for at least 2 years.
Right.
If you're an athlete who signs with Tech out of high school, you have to sign a contract that you're going to be with Tech at least 2 years. And I think it'd be really neat if they'd put something in to these contracts, or you can say to Kyron Drones, tell you what, we'll sign you to a 3-year contract, but if you leave before then and transfer somewhere else, then we have to get some concession from the team you're transferring to, just like the pro leagues work. So if you've got a player that you recruit out of high school, a Mansoor Delane, nobody's paying any attention to Mansoor Delane. There aren't any 2-star recruits anymore, but he was the definition of a 2-star recruit. So Virginia Tech sees him, they turn him into an All-American, and you know, this is hypothetical. And he bounces and goes somewhere else. And Virginia Tech is screwed because they put all this money and time into developing this athlete. Well, wherever he transfers, wouldn't it be nice if you got some sort of concession from the school he transferred to? Like, I don't know, $250,000.
Yeah.
Whatever. You can find ways to define that. So all of this talking is to tell fans that, you know, college sports is having its moment of clarity. It is hitting rock bottom. You know, I don't know how this is going to get resolved. But the linchpin here is the House versus NCAA lawsuit. That is a landmark lawsuit that is going to do a lot to shape the future of college athletics, but it has to play out first. So,
well, it's going to be very interesting to see. I think individual schools will be able to figure out how they're going to handle it, especially at our level, mid-major level. It's going to be a much different ball game. It already is, just dealing with the NIL and what the expectations are from the kids who play at our level. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. And I know now you see these rumors that the students don't want to be employees. They understand now that, oh, wait a minute, employees is going to change things to where we have very little control anymore. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I have no idea which way it's going to go, but there's no way the schools are going to continue to function like this, like you're saying. This whole thing. See, they've gotten into this. They've jumped into this with free form, being able to move and do whatever they want and control. I'll hold all the cards, and now those cards are going to be taken away, and now you're going to see pushback.
Yeah, but that's the street agents in the ears of the athletes telling them that. And what will happen later in the process is that the entire picture will be presented to the athletes. It'll include things like, you know, your scholarship is guaranteed if you suffer a career-ending injury, then you – and I think that's actually already in college.
Yeah, sports, I want to say it is if you're hurt.
You'll
yeah.
get health care for, you know, 10 years after you graduate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the athletes will be made to see that it's not just all about jumping from school to school and getting as much money as you can. We're going to enter this new model where, yeah, that's restricted some, but here's what you're going to get in exchange for it. And what you're not getting right now is that second part of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
You're just getting the agents and the money people saying, oh, you don't want to do it. You don't want any controls. You want to be able to wear. Well, does Tyler Nickel really want to be on his third school in 3 years? I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
He's cashed in, so he probably doesn't care. Right? He's been a vagabond.
Yeah, but what happened in
the, you know?
But was he promised $400,000 at Tech and he only got $50,000?
Yeah.
Well, that sucked. You know, that wasn't great. These are stories you don't hear. It's not all great for the athletes.
No, it's not. So. It's not. It's fascinating. It really is. I know you're right. I think the roster turnover year per year is a bigger concern, but I hear from enough people they're having a hard time wrapping their arms around Kyren Drones making $1 million plus. I mean, I get it. People are not – they understand that athletes should get some of theirs because I don't want to see the NCAA. I've always pulled for the athletes whenever these pro sports have strikes, I'm always in the athletes' corner because they're the ones who entertain me. I don't need to see billionaires get more money into their coffer to do whatever. I never pull for the owners, so I get why athletes should be getting something. But I also understand when I get a call from Derek in Blacksburg telling me it's going to be really tough for me to sit there on Saturdays and know this guy's getting $1.5 million to play quarterback for Virginia Tech.
For the Kyren Droneses of the world, there's a dark side to this. You are now a professional athlete.
That's right.
And professionals are open to criticism and commentary.
Absolutely.
In a way that college kids aren't.
Have never been before. That's exactly right.
And you and I don't have the time to really drill into that right now. We should do that next week.
Yeah.
We should talk about that next week, specifically about I need to go and listen to the podcast that Liz Kitley and George Amore did this week, where Amore was, from what I understand, I haven't listened to it. I've just seen people talking about it. Amore was quite taken aback by some of the negative feedback regarding her decision to transfer to Kentucky. And there is a certain amount of naivete there on the part of the athlete. But that's a deep discussion you and I can have at another
absolutely.
Time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's also a very interesting discussion. But that's what happens when you are a pro athlete.
And that's what they are. That's exactly right.
You know, that old argument of, man, don't say mean stuff about Kyren. He's just a college kid.
Nope.
Not anymore.
He negotiated and used LSU against Tech. And he got more money. They're spending a lot more money on him than they wanted. So
So what you got right now, Rick, is this: the pendulum is just slamming back and forth right now, and it'll eventually settle down. So picture this in your mind: there's a giant pendulum, and sometime in the early 1900s, the NCAA was formed, and they started pulling that pendulum back. And for 100 years, they pulled that pendulum further and further and further back, and the NCAA did their crap and never gave anything to the athletes. And now NIL started and the pendulum got let
go. That's exactly right.
And it is swinging down at 100 miles an hour.
And it's not going to stop. It's a wrecking ball.
It is destroying everything in its path right now. But eventually it's going to swing back the other way and back and forth and back and forth.
It is. We'll see how many fans are left once the ball stops swinging. Wrapping it up with Will after this.
I'm Naheem Hines, running back for the Indianapolis Colts.
All right. A lot going on. Will Stewart, good discussion. Getting a lot of reaction. That's good. Yeah, a lot of things people don't think about that are our reality, right? We don't have a lot of answers. Nobody here is claiming we do because nobody out there does. We just deal with it. I deal with every day, literally. I know it's a smaller version, but at Radford, that it changes every day. We hear something that, like, this is where we think it's going. This is where it might go. We don't know because nobody knows. Right now.
First of all, I wouldn't call it a discussion. It's more like a monologue.
It is. Me. That's all it is.
And secondly, yeah, you got 15 cooks standing around the kitchen throwing crap in the pot.
Everybody's waiting on the next thing from the courts, basically, everybody. That's where we're waiting on. This next ruling is going to help dictate where we're going. All right. Great stuff from Will. Very thoughtful discussion. Hour 3, the Power Hour. Final hour for another week. We've got Jen and Mike Ashley ahead.